Hello and welcome to Creative Instinct on RNRA and the web. I'm Michael Sheriffs, and I'm wandering through the streets of New Delhi to meet a man. The man is Gautam Bhatia. He's a writer, an architect, and an artist who lived abroad for many years, but returned when he saw his country in an amazing state of flux. Gautam Bhatia represents a class of India's intellectuals that's attempting to see the way forward for their country, for their culture, and for the people across all the vast cities and regions. So I'm heading towards one of the many thousands of compounds or colonies that are scattered through this part of town. Gautam lives on the edge of the Gulmohar Park Journalists Colony. Alas, the journalists have long gone, and Gulmohar Park is now one of the new thoroughly gentrified parts of town.
Hello, I'm Michael Sheriffs. Good to see you.
My name is Gautam Bhatia. I'm an architect. I've been in India for the last 25 years. Before that, I was in the US studying and working. But the push to come back to India was partly sort of facilitated by India being a very unstructured sort of place. To me, it's been a country in the making, and it's a country without rules and regulations. So we make rules and regulations and we stick by a few of them, and we realize that maybe these are not for us, and we move on to something else. And that to me is something which I find in my own architecture practice and in the way most people see India, that it is an evolving place and it hasn't created a model for itself. Part of it is, I think, something which I'm not very happy with is the fact that we are very uncritical of ourselves. We're very critical of other cultures and other ideas. But when it comes to assessing things which we make for ourselves, we just sort of fall apart. And I think that is one of the reasons why, to me, India is a great place to be. And it's, of course, it's home, so that was one of the reasons for coming back.
One of the things that you hinted at there about the difficulty of India looking at itself, examining itself, is that it's a terrible cliche in a way that there are so many different Indias. How much of that is true? How much of it is that it is an amalgam of so many different tribes and people and cultures that sort of singular self-reflection is difficult?
Well, I think self-reflection is difficult because India sort of straddles so many different ideas, even ideals in a way. Because if you belong to the elite in India, that means you are essentially Western educated. Your ideal sort of falls somewhere in Europe and America. And yet that allows you to create a place for yourself which is essentially alien to the traditional culture of India. And that, I think, is something quite unique to India, that you can actually live a completely foreign life in a place which has 10 different ways of living, I suppose. One of the serious problems I see now is that the two sides of India are now competing with each other, and what had been a kind of dormant India, the traditional India, is now seeking a voice. And those are now very loud voices. And it's no longer, you know, the elite trying to contain a mass of a very different sort of culture away from itself. Because, you know, the rules throughout in the last two or three decades have been made for the elite. The ease of, say, importing foreign cars into the country, or making things which are essentially for consumption by the very few, are all made by people who belong to the top of the pile. Now I think the other India wants to be heard. And I think the elite that way are a bit uncomfortable, which is actually a very good thing, because I think in most places around the world, there is a coming together of much larger populations, and with very specific ideas that the majority don't feel that they belong to their own culture. And I think that is something which is now changing very rapidly in India. Part of it, I think, is also visible now on the street, which it wasn't earlier. You know, the contrast of two cultures. You'll have one man playing golf at a 40-acre golf course, and you'll have 40 men at a hand pump on the roadside trying to have a bath. And there'll be somebody defecating on the sidewalk. But opposite that is a house which contains a swimming pool and a jacuzzi. So now the contrasts are, and the sad irony of many of these very difficult forms of living, it's becoming hard to take. So I think that appeal that you know, there has to be a kind of common ground for culture is maybe now the strength of the country, that, you know, we have to adapt to a new way of living.
Somebody once said to me that one of the things you have to understand with India is that you may never reconcile the chaos. That if you want it to become order, you'll have a very long wait. Those sorts of irreconcilable differences between an elite, a sort of a very disparate, educated, wealthy class, and the very, very disenfranchised of India. Is it going to paralyze India waiting for that to reconcile, to resolve into something that is unified?
Well, I think the reconciliation is going to be very difficult because, so much of India's wealth lies with so few that the idea of a system of distribution hasn't really occurred to those at the top. And I think now the have-nots are kind of clamoring at the door, saying that if this is my life, then I want to change it. But the difficulties of that reconciliation will be sorted out, I suppose, in the next decade or so. Because right now, I think India is a very selfish society. I mean, the cream of India wants to remain completely self-contained and insular. And I think unless that changes, there has to be a much broader understanding of what money can do. And I don't think that has actually occurred to people in high places. And high places, I mean politics, I mean business, those even in the art world. And so, there is an India which sort of proliferates its ideas in a sort of a form of urban culture which has an international basis to it. Indian art will go to fairs in Basel or in Singapore and in the US and to Australia. But it will not, for instance, generate any interest in the local conditions or in places, other places in India. And that's true even of architecture. I find, almost 90% of our clients are those who have traveled to Brazil, to New York and London, and they want, in fact, to replicate images from those places. And if I even vaguely suggest that, there may be a different way of building in conditions which are different from London and New York, there is a complete denial of that. There is almost a statement that we belong to a different sort of core of India. And in fact, if we need to change India's core, it is to imitate and to facilitate that connection with the West rather than connection with a traditional way of Indian identity.
You were saying before about the increasing clamour of the voice of the other India. How is that being expressed? How is that being articulated? Is it at a political level or is it at a level of writers and artists? How is it being seen?
Well, it's at a political and a business or commercial level, it's being denied completely. I mean, the idea that people of marginalized people have a voice is always shot down in political or business circles. And the idea of perpetuating a business class and of creating an elite culture is always at the expense of denying that there is another India. So if you look at how the distribution system works in government or in business, it's a complete failure. And there is not even an attempt to amend the old ways and to find innovative ways of distributing the wealth and all. And I think those like I mentioned, the rules of the game are always being redefined in India. And there are many things which are, even today, so farcical because they are adaptations of colonial rules adapted 100 years ago. And even though they've been changed in England and in Australia and we still carry on.
Falsified.
Exactly. And it's... So that's why they, you know, these daily battles in the newspaper, partly it's because the rules have been stagnant for so long that now there needs to be a new way of looking at things.
You're listening to Creative Instinct on RN, RA and the Web with me, Michael Sheriffs. And I'm in a very elegant but modest home in New Delhi, speaking to writer, architect and artist Gautam Bhatia about the state of modern India.
So in all of this, is there a role for intellectuals, for writers, for artists, for people who don't have the same structural ambition, who are actually looking at the gaps, looking at the shadows, looking at the sort of the nuance, trying to put a bit of sophistication into the conversation? What is the role for people who are thinking at that level?
Well, I think there is a very clear role for art in such matters because, art lives, survives at this edge of maybe two generations or between reality and a different future. But so far, I think what has happened is that art has retained its image as an elite form of cultural exchange. And till that really changes, we'll really find that art has a very minimal role to play. What is happening, I think, is that a great deal of traditional artists are now finding that their work is of no real value because they've been representing mythological ideas. And so in order to make a more realistic assessment of the way things are in India, their art is changing. And I think that is going to have a much broader impact once that begins to proliferate in the rural areas. And but the larger picture of art fairs and that, I think, remains very much very insular and very much of very personal.
What about as an architect, as a designer, as somebody who was drawn back to this amazingly amorphous cultural phenomenon that is India and that is contemporary India? What's the relationship between these big urban centres like Delhi, Mumbai, and the regions? Is Delhi almost another planet? Is it emblematic of anything broader in India, or is it a sort of a phenomenon in itself, as New York is in America?
Delhi, I don't think makes any real impact in the way things ought to be. It is an aspirational place, but for the wrong reasons. I think many people come to Delhi from the rural areas or the surrounding cities with the idea of improving their lives. But the images of improvement are actually the wrong images. I think we are selling the wrong ideas to those who have these aspirations. And, unless as architects and as bureaucrats and all who really enact architectural ideas at a large scale. Unless, you know, we can begin to see things in a very different perspective and to take sort of broader leaps of from this page of innovation or identity, and to create entirely new ways of living, new cities perhaps. The idea of sort of making more and more of what is in Delhi or in Bombay or Bangalore is entirely meaningless. It's a drain on energy, on resources, on, you know, the abuse of the car and the way people move around. Every aspect of city life now needs to be questioned, and with a great deal of seriousness. You can't live like this. I mean, I occupy far more space than, say, a family of 20 who live down the road. The way we restructure our cities has to be thought out and has to be done very quickly. And unless the government makes a serious attempt at defining how we may live, there is really nobody else to do it. With of course, the backing of architects and others. But the whole point of perpetuating this middle-class culture, especially for those who've never had it, doesn't make any sense. There has to be a new way of redefining urban life.
And there's an element, as you said, of it being like a cruel lie. So is part of the answer maybe to decentralize India again, to take it back to the regions, to build up the sort of second, third tier cities?
Yes, I think that primary kind of cause of this disengagement with the population is just this, that the culture of the elite has been proposing ideas which are not affordable, and the longer we wait, the more difficult it becomes to return to some kind of a sane way of living, where sane and more equitable way of living, in which resources are shared and people live not as on great pieces of farmland, but you begin to define a structure for life which becomes a medium for many of the people who now aspire to living better. And living better needs to be thought out as being more than just a car, a two-car garage, and a glass shopping mall next door. So I think this idea that you have to move away from Delhi, you have to move away from Bombay, and make places which have no past, or their past comes actually partly from very historic backgrounds and from the imagination. The present needs to be disconnected entirely.
So you said you were drawn back because of this, all the sort of potential, the sort of fluid nature of an evolving modern India. Has it actually borne out that for you, or do you feel yourself a bit trapped in the sort of structural necessities of India as it's evolving? Are you able to bring that intellectual consideration to the work that you do?
It hasn't been easy, no. I mean, it's, you always return to India with great hope and anticipation. And many times your ideas get frustrated because there is a great deal of bureaucracy, or there are other things which slow you down. But the only at the back of all the frustration lies this nagging hope that there is the potential to do something much better than what we are doing, and I think that potential just keeps you going. Even though most of the time we are building elite spas and hotels and houses for the rich, the more interesting part of it is being able to design something for the really poor. So, you know, the extremes of India keep you sort of mired. It's the middle class that's really dull and boring. We need to... because India kind of allows you both these extremes, it keeps the mind at least flowing. And we may not have much success on the ground, but the mind hasn't stopped yet.
You used the word frustration instead of disappointment, which implies there is still hope, which is nice. Tell me about the sort of work that you are doing or that you are hoping to do for the really poor of India. What are the sorts of things that are being envisaged, either on a sort of a large level or on a small level?
Well, you know, a lot of the work that we had done earlier, when it's before the practice moved towards larger projects and rather over budget projects, was related to doing, you know, some kind of housing in the villages. At the time I returned in the late 80s, we were doing some mud housing in which was actually the result of an earthquake in Uttar Pradesh. And so at the time we built about 18 low-cost mud houses. The problem, of course, was that as soon as you did those and some bigger projects came in, the practice expanded and you needed to pay draftsmen and other architects. So then the kind of curse of a successful practice kind of took over, and you had to ensure that a certain amount of money came into the office. So the poor were kind of tossed out of the at least out of my practice. But
so the originating ethic sort of became a casualty of too much success.
Yes, exactly. I think that's now I think in a way after 25 years of working, it and there's a sort of return to the original moral which tied us to my return to India, and that is partly I think this interest in doing a low cost house which we've been working on as an idea for the last 4 or 5 years. The whole point of it is to make something which is firstly of a different ideal than a middle class house, so that it uses both in terms of human energy and the consumption of other resources. It becomes a kind of model for others to replicate. And it also is using materials which are not conventional. And thirdly, it points to an idea of being self-fabricated, so that there is an architect involved in doing the basic construction diagram and to fit the foundations. But the rest of it is carried out by the owner himself. So these are, you know, these are things which we are always working on or promoting through some builders who've made so much money that they want now to return to, for whatever reason, you know, moral reasons or I think maybe whatever it is, the guilt now seems to be playing up, and maybe the guilt's playing up for me also.
Gautam Bhatia, thank you very much for joining me on Creative Instinct. It's been a real pleasure to come and spend time with you in this extraordinary and slightly unnerving city.
Thank you very much, Michael. I enjoyed it.
And with that, I head back out into the mesmerising chaos of South Delhi. I was speaking there to the very thoughtful Gautam Bhatia, whose combined worlds of art, architecture and writing give him a lot of time to ponder the fabric of his society. I'm Michael Sheriffs, and you can find details about this program by going to the website abc.net.au/Radio National and following the links to Creative Instinct.